It is Wednesday, my dudes, and that means it's time for another episode of Codex Radio. As always, I'm your host, Endless Odyssey. It is Wednesday, February 13th, 2019, and that means this is episode 58 and part 46 of our ongoing reading of Planescape Torment. Before we get into the recap, I do need to mention up top that if the show sounds different to you this week, you're not crazy. I got a new microphone. I liked my old one quite a bit, but I wanted to change to something XLR-based. So if you are going crazy trying to figure out why I sound different, that's the reason. I'm hopeful that it will lead to an improved audio quality across the board for the show, but it may take me a few weeks to get all the new settings dialed in and figure out how to use this one best, so it may even be a little worse for a time, but stick with me. I promise that it will get better every week until I've got it perfect from here on out. And with that out of the way, let's get on to the recap. Last week, we left the prison at Cursed after defeating Valor and found ourselves in the abode of Fuel Forktongue, who, as promised, was pretty helpful, I guess all things considered, though clearly fairly bitter about it. The Nameless One helped himself to a variety of Fuel's wares, including a cursed weapon and some of his spells, but regrettably Fuel did not know where our mortality was. However, he referred us to the Pillar of Skulls on Baetor, claiming that it would have the knowledge we sought. Fortunately, there was a portal to Baetor right outside Fuel's home, and so, despite Mort's protestations, we went over to Baetor. After fighting a pack of demons, the gang did stumble upon the pillar, which was nasty as heck, but was fairly forthcoming with information. It did ask the Nameless One to make some sacrifices in exchange for that info, but we got mostly out of it unscathed. The pillar wanted us to do all kinds of unfortunate things, such as sacrifice Anna or Grace or Mort to it, but in the end, all the Nameless One really had to do was let the pillar chew on him for a bit. In exchange for that, the info we got from the pillar was that our mortality could be found somewhere called the Fortress of Regrets. And what's more, Trius knows how to get there, and deliberately held that information from us. For reasons currently unknown, but it appears that this is not our first encounter with Trius. It seems a previous incarnation spoke to him before, and Trius learned of our condition then, but chose to withhold that information to extort us into releasing him, perhaps. Clearly a little frustrated at this runaround that he's getting, the Nameless One begrudgingly left the pillar to head back to Fuel's place, when the pillar got real mad and demanded we return Mort to it. And then we ran like hell. And that's where we pick up today. I now give you part 46 of Planescape Torment. Chapter 104. We loped through the blasted valleys of Baetor with the shrieks of the damned behind us, but they were muted by the troubles that lay even more distant in the past. A ringing horror sent shudders through my chest, the kind that resonates when a niggling doubt blooms into full terrible realization. It was much like leaving a fire unattended when leaving the house, only to realize partway through your day that the hut you left behind and hours walk away may now be a pile of smoldering ash. The race back seemed to take twice as long. Each step lengthened with that sense of panic. Each moment stretched thin with the tension that gripped me. Lured by the scent of Tanari blood, they came in a horde of fangs and claws. Thinking they were facing a blood war invasion, the Krungan and his Abishai lackeys expected a co-committant amount of brutality. We didn't disappoint them, with me choosing to vent my frustration on the field of battle. The strange sulphurous musk of Fuel's abode burned my nostrils. He looked at me through slitted eyes, an uninvited guest come to rummage through his belongings and upset the tidiness of his home.
Feh! So you've returned. And what did the pillar speak of? Did it answer your insipid questions?
I grimaced, saying nothing, but Fuel caught my mood and a dry cackle shook his shoulders. He wiped the tears from his eyes and grinned at me.
Ah, when the rare idiot does go to the Pillar of Skulls to seek answers, he rarely enjoys the answers he receives.
Trius was the one who sent me here under false pretenses, I snapped. I wouldn't have set foot in Baetor if it weren't for him. Fuel stiffens, his sudden mirth dead in an instant.
Trius? Trius the Betrayer sent you here?
His claws clenched and unclenched.
This is the final indignity. That self-righteous bastard. Kill him and I will reward you with all that I have at my disposal. Flay his skin and bring it to me so that I might wear it as a cloak.
He gagged, eyes bulging.
I mean, no, do not harm the diva. It would be wrong to do so. I was mistaken.
What did Trius do to you?
Feh! Years of service as an advocate in Furnas, painstaking detail and organization. I never questioned my superiors. I did all that was asked of me. I punished those below me with the cruelest and most inventive punishments when they failed. Then one slip and it all comes crashing down. All due to chance, chaos, randomness. And the lesser races wonder why the Betezu wish the multiverse to be an orderly construct.
He paused, hissing in anger.
The diva lied. It lied. Trius the Betrayer tricked me into signing a contract, and I, blinded by the possibility of capturing him, walked straight into his trap. If he dies, the contract is over. But I have not been able to find him. And if I did, how would I harm him? Oh, what am I to do? Even these treacherous thoughts make my mind burn in pain. I was so sure I had that paragon of self-righteousness. That short-sighted greed cost me the rest of my centuries of glorious conniving and entombed me in this sinkhole of goodwill. Bleh!
Fuel scraped his tongue with his teeth, trying to clear the bad taste of those words from his mouth.
And now I am cursed to do good deeds, to aid those in need of aid. Feh! An eternity of curses on Trius! A pox upon his blessed aid! May all the dung heaps of the Maladomini rain down upon his head!
He ranted for a few moments longer.
That skulking pseudo-child of light! That contemptible... I mean, no harm to him in his treacherous, lying, no respect for the law ways. Feh! He is a deceiver, mortal, and you should trust him in nothing. I mean this, of course, with all due charity and...
Forktongue spat on the ground.
Kindness. His deception has cost me an eternity. Unless he should die.
His toothy grin was surprisingly hopeful then. As much as I like what I've seen of his work, I said, and Fuel grunted sourly in response, I have to agree. Something is off balance.
So, perhaps you would have to kill him. For the greater good, of course.
We'll have to see. But don't think you can go back to ravaging the plains, Fuel. I know where you live, and I have all your weapons and spells.
We'll see,
he hissed, as if pondering my demise. For now, I need a way out of this power's forsaken place.
Feh! Does that mean you shall leave me to my solitude once again? Then I proclaim with as much delight as possible that the portal lies under the arse end of this creature's bones. It will return you to that groveling hovel town of Kirst from whence you came, and I can think of few more befitting ways for you to travel.
No time to lose, I figured. We stepped through the portal. What fresh hell was this? A cold desert wind blew through the ruins that once held cursed. Fractured foundations and pillars sprouted like jagged teeth. Splintered posts curled up from the ground like the remaining fibers of an uprooted tree, still bleeding with sap. There was a freshness to the damage. It was clean and new. And I looked around warily, wondering what could have done this, and whether it was still here.
"It's shifted," Mort murmured. "The whole city's been shifted."
Still numb with the shock of it all, I found myself fiddling with a handful of dust, watching it spill from between my fingers. The wind carried the sand away, whipping it into ribbons until it vanished in the distance. Trius. Cursed must have been right on the edge of Carceri, held back only by the thinnest margin of belief, the faintest flicker of good. Trius didn't have to do much to break that tenuous link, but I was certain he had something to do with it nonetheless. I stood up, alert as a hound, and scanned the rubble. "Do you smell that?" I whispered.
"What? Smell what, Chief?"
Mort turned around. "I'm not sure." My gaze shifted, head flicking this way and that, trying to trace it. There was a faint miasma in the air that smelled of dread and rotting dreams. It was familiar.
"If you're gonna spook me, Chief, you could at least be specific about it."
"I sense it as well."
Dakon's voice was low, almost muted by the unsheathing of his blade.
"We have encountered its like, bound as the condemned on the Pillars of Silence."
It was then that I recalled the cursed box we had come across in the Hive Marketplace, and the demon within, who had been scattered across existence. A roar echoed in the distance then, feral and furious, and thrilled with the blood of the hunt. It clambered over the broken rubble of the city, and its screams sounded like a cheese grater drawn across my brain. Immediately, the force bolt sprung from my hands, sending thunderclaps against the creature's chest. Some seemed to punch through its hide. Others just slid uselessly past its skin, like a stone skipping across a pond. It crashed into me, and I spiraled through the air, several ribs crushed and splintered bits of bone punching through my lungs. I was thankful for the sand, even as I spat it out. If it was stone I had landed on, I would have left a crimson smear 5 feet long. I picked myself up, sand shifting beneath my feet. Dakon dodged beneath the fiend's swings, blade flashing and sticking its hide like a pin. Anna circled around, tail flashing and flicking up arcs of sand. Nordam's crossbow bolts peppered into his body. If there was anything I hated about my life, it was this. First to be hit, last to join the fray. Unfortunately, I got exactly what I wished for. Its nostrils flared, sucking in the dry desert air and devouring the scent of battle, tasting the smell of its prey. Then it looked to me with those feral eyes, burning with a cruel and alien intelligence. I licked my lips and spun around on my feet, breaking into a run as it barreled past Dakon. The Gith blinked in confusion. Anna picked herself up and cursed up a storm after being thrown off. And I just ran. I turned around periodically, a jet of force flaring from my hands each time. In one breath, I murmured a prayer of thanks to the spellweaver who designed the force missiles to seek out its targets, precluding the need to aim. In the next breath, I cursed the creature's magic-resistant hide. We made a ridiculous train, with me dashing ahead in a panic, leaping over rubble and dodging around broken pillars and leftover masonry. The demon lumbered in pursuit, smashing through any obstacle in front of it. The others trailed behind, ducking past rocks and splintered beams hurled by the fiend's fury. Adrenaline and regeneration gave speed to my limbs. Each twisted ankle popped back into place with newly growing sinew. Each fractured tibia or bruised shin mended even as I limped along, leg flopping to one side. It's an ancient instinct, the chase. We see it between wolves and deer, bear and men, even with children at play. When something runs, something sparks in the back of the primal consciousness. The urge to chase rolls forward, building momentum with each step, until you've got something barreling towards you in a mindless game of catch. Until you face it. I turned around, my lungs searing with each breath. My vision swam, but I could see the heavy bruises and sheared skin left by the missiles I had slung over my shoulder. I kept the mantra in mind. Face your enemy, and it will stop. Stare down your aggressor, and it will give pause. Doesn't work with fiends, though. It crashed into me, all claws and teeth, breath fetid with the scent of rotting flesh from past meals. My last spell went off between us, and lightning bloomed in a crack. I felt my limbs spasm, my arms grow numb, pain lacing along my spine like a skewer through a boiled rat. When I blinked and took my first breath after, the smell of rotting meat filled my nostrils. A weight lay over me, something wet and foul-smelling. My hand shot into the gaping maw just as it clamped shut. The dagger was tight in my fist, the blade turned up toward the roof of its mouth. The force of the bite drove the dagger tip into the hard palate, lodging it into a wedge of splintered bone. The creature shrieked, every instinct telling itself to open its mouth. But still it held fast, refusing to let me go. Those dead pale eyes stared into me, brows arching with hate. "You can't move your limbs, can you?" I coughed. "Still numb with shock?" A rumble bubbled in its throat, and I felt a pressure in the front of my mind. It invaded my consciousness, and its twisted thoughts pressed against mine.
"My hunt is tied to my liberator, and I will devour him to restore my strength. Did you truly think that any box with a pretty trinket on it should be opened? You freed me, you stupid little primate."
"I don't think you'll be doing much devouring as you are," I grunted, and the creature's jaw tightened against my arm, as if in denial. Yet the blade scraped just a little deeper. "You'd think that we're in a stalemate."
"Your strength is gone. Mine is growing with each drop of your blood in my belly. The taste of an immortal is sweet."
I ignored him. "But you should know about the most powerful weapon we stupid primates have." A sense of amusement filled my mind.
"More of your small hedge magic."
A grim smile spread across my lips. "Opposable thumbs." And then I drove one into its eye socket. It screamed, limbs spasming, claws twitching as it crawled forward, trying to gather the strength to gut me. It was a race between us. What would meet its mark faster? My digit worming its way to break the eggshell-thin bone of the socket, driving slowly in to stir its brain? Or would it be the fiendish claws still creaking with electricity, eager to pierce my chest and rupture my heart? We'll never know, because in that instant a pair of daggers punched through each side of the fiend's neck, and the creature's head rolled forward to slap me in the face. Its breath really, really stank. "Don't know what I'd do without you guys," I grunted, working to shove the colossal beast off of me. When I cleaned myself off, I had Nordom pin it with a few more bolts for good measure, then slice it apart in case some power allowed it to revive once again. I then heard the dull clink of something metal hit the ground. "Well, hello," I declared happily as I held up a blood-covered ring. "What's this?"
"Imagine what treasures you'd find if you searched through things other than a creature's guts," Mord grinned. "Now, if you've finished, I've found something you might want to see."
Past the fallen remnant of the gate to Innerkirst, in the heart of the ruins, squatted the four-legged set of arches that held the gate. As I approached, the rotting heads on the gate began to speak, chanting words back and forth between themselves to form coherent sentences.
Gone. Gone. Lost to the betrayer. Lost to the light.
Their moans bubbled and broke incessantly, like waves crashing against a dead shore.
Gone on the wind, swept on a tide of evil. Through the gate, gone, gone. The town, gone, lost to its own hatred. Through the gate, into the red prison. The prison plain, Carceri.
Their keening song built, weeping rising to a peak.
The prison plain, chaos, evil. Worlds within worlds, orbs within orbs, strung out like malign pearls in the sky. The red prison, doom of titans and gods alike.
Can't you speak normally? The heads continued to moan.
Beyond the veil, all is shadowed, illuminated. Nothing translates, nothing easy. No.
Then why are you still here?
Betrayed, despised, framed, punished, executed, made an example of, hung here by enemies, lost, lost, lost.
Their breaths rattled as one. Is it just me, or are there far too many talking, disembodied heads around these days? The heads paused. They looked at each other for a moment, then back at me. They hung shamefully from the gate. Never mind that, I sighed. I needed answers, and this wasn't going to be a pleasant trip. Do you have any idea how to get there or get it back here?
Through the gate, into the prison. No return from the prison, no return. Go through the gate. Go through the gate. Your destiny awaits you there.
I looked up, gaze firming. Those words sounded much too prophetic for my comfort. What do you know about my destiny?
The diva awaits you.
The heads fell silent then, leaving only the thrum of the portal to be carried on the wind. Chapter 105. Bands of toxic gray clouds crept along the curve of the sky. For a minute, all I could see were fleeting shadows scuttling through a blood-red mist. Moments ticked away with the pounding of my heart as my eyes adjusted, interrupted only by bestial screams and shrieks of agony. Yet too soon, the world came into sharp, terrible focus. Deep scarlet light seeped and rippled from the sky, as if I were looking up from the bottom of an ocean of blood, watching the distant light ripple through the ribbons of blackness. Now and again, jagged flecks of lightning tore between the clouds like white-hot wounds. There was carnage. Everywhere, carnage. The few guardsmen of Kursk fended off the hordes of the Crimson Knight. The wounded clawed down the streets, flecked with acid, writhing as their flesh sizzled and smoldered. Scaled beasts galloped through the streets, devouring the dead and wounded with equal measure. The condemned citizens wailed in terror and despair, screaming against the madness that ate inward from the edges of the city. Some profited from the chaos. Thieves emptied houses with impunity, tossing the civilians into the streets and leaving them to the beast's fangs. Thugs dragged screaming noblewomen into the alleys, their gowns torn and tears black with melted eyeliner. Wizards stood on rooftops, many leveling their magic, not against the demonic hordes, but the citizens below. Flashes of their cast spells lit up their faces, demented with glee. Old grudges would be met today. And on a high balcony, floating above the stench of chaos and murder and death, was Trius, his skeletal wings unfurled and gaze hard with cold satisfaction. And the burning question was this: where in all the hells do I start? A familiar figure peeked around the corner, and recognizing me, he loped forward.
I backed away, but squinting a little, I saw that I knew him, too. It was that smelly old man, Kais, the caretaker.
You have returned to a town of calamity, traveler. The Diva rises triumphant above the wreckage, having dragged us here to our doom. There is only one way to return, and that is to strike the Diva down, to cause the town to recant its treachery and deceit. The stronger the belief of the town in forgiveness, the weaker the Diva.
Trius did all this?
The Diva rose from the ground and condemned the town's iniquities. A great confusion arose as the buildings tumbled around us, and then we arrived. There is only one way to combat Trius, and that is to weaken him by good deeds and turning the townsfolk's mind away from chaos and evil. Otherwise, he shall surely triumph. I have work to attend to. Should you require rest, seek the old barracks or the distillery.
He pressed a scroll into my hands.
Now, take this. It will aid you.
We made our way through the streets, blood hot with battle. I had to fight hand to hand, mostly. My larger spells could mean collateral damage, and we needed to save as many citizens as possible. Nightmarish horrors fell with slashed throats or snapped necks. We cleared the sections of the town as best we could, and finally, in a small eddy where the violence had shrunk into a trickle, I heard a moan of agony. Beneath the wheels of a wagon lay an aging githzerai, trapped during the chaos. He spat a bloody wad and grinned up at me.
Not going to help me, are you? That's what brought us here in the first place.
He laughed weakly.
Who are you?
He is a traitor to the githzerai. He has cursed our people.
Dakon drew his blade.
That is reason enough for him to die.
Put the blade away, Dakon, I urged. We don't have time for grudges.
Yes, put the blade away, Xerth dog. I spit on your teachings. Wear your chains a little longer.
The Githzerai turned his head toward me.
I am Tovis Giloth. I used to be the burgher of this town, until the accursed Diva broke free.
What can you tell me of the Diva?
We had imprisoned it, oh so many years ago. I thought it perfectly hidden from all sniffing dogs and traitors. Suddenly it burst from under the earth, blazing, and my beautiful, beautiful home slid.
He looked at me intently.
I would have my revenge. Free me.
You said you were the burgher of this town?
My compatriots and I, we were using this city as a base to return ourselves to power. But that is a story for another day. You and yours have peddled secrets of the people to prime worlders,
Dakon declared coldly.
Exchanged knowledge and tactics and fortress locations for trinkets.
I can't say I think much of your town, I said wryly, firing several purple bolts down the street at passing Garaleth.
I don't either, but it's mine, and to see it lost to that preening, self-righteous Diva, it's more than I can bear.
He coughed wetly.
Free me, and I shall aid you in your revenge on him. My guards can hold off the monsters for a time.
Relax, I'll get you out of there. Dakon's eyes hardened.
You cannot trust this one. Let him perish here, under the cart.
No, Dakon, we're pulling him out. Tovis's thin mouth compressed further still.
Then lift, damn you, and be done.
We gathered around him, two on each side. Grace knelt over him, administering healing and ready to pull him out the moment we unpinned him. Yet as we prepared to lift, a cry of agony sounded from the other side of the cart.
Ah, I'm on the other side. You're killing me.
The voice was familiar. Barrag? It was that rogue, the self-described engineer who came searching for an imprisoned Diva,
What are you doing here? We set down the cart gently, and Tova snarled in frustration as the weight bore down on him again.
What are you waiting for?
He cried out.
Free me!
Barog Quickshoes moaned.
I only came to curse to free the Diva, creature of good. I was misinformed. I should never have come.
I circled around the cart, and there he was, coughing blood, the axle pressing down on his ribs. What happened, Barog?
I was fleeing the city when it began to slide. I was near him, and he grabbed me. The wagon fell from the sky, and he tried to shove me under it while he escaped. But I still ask that you find a way to free him as well.
Dakon nodded to me coldly. Maybe we should just lift from this end and crush the damn Gith.
I still command the guards of Kerst,
Tovis pleaded. His voice sounded frantic, no doubt with the fear that I would allow Dakon to execute him right then and there.
I can inspire them, aid them, slow the tide of monsters that stand between you and the Diva. Free me, and your task shall be easier. Free him, and you gain nothing.
You gain nothing by freeing me, I confess to that,
Barog admitted.
But surely the tide of goodness will swing. If you save me without thought of gain, better still to save us both.
All right, how about I lift this off both of you? My companions and I can do it if we throw ourselves into it. We couldn't count on leverage to free them both. We'd have to lift the cart straight up, and with the rubble weighing it down, our task was all the harder. No time to clear the stones away, either. My muscles strained as I lift from Barog's end. Anna, Dakon, and Nordom lift from the other. My knees buckled. The muscles of my lower back seemed to twist into a knot, but inch by inch, the cart rose, until it was loose enough for Grace to help pull Barog out, kicking and shuffling. On the other end of the cart, someone let out a pained wail.
Tovis? The sod's fine, Chief, Mort replied. I just had to bite on something to get him out.
My thanks, mate. Barog dusted himself off and checked his body quickly for wounds. I've had enough of this, Berg. I'm back to Mount Celestia. I hope your good deeds stand you in good stead wherever you're going. He gazed off toward the Diva standing on the balcony.
I can't believe I came here to see that.
He shook his head and then ran off. Tovis went sourly and adjusted his now frayed knot of hair.
You have my gratitude, human. I go now to the walls to aid my guard. My city shall not perish.
He gave me a crooked smile and pulled a scroll from his coat.
I do not envy you with the conflict with the Diva. He is a fearsome opponent. Here, take this. It may help you.
A large guardsman bellowed orders to the civilians gathered around him. He glared at us through the slits of his helm.
What do you want, Piker? And make it quick before we get to work in here.
What's going on here?
What's it look like, you sod? We're about to loot this warehouse. You want in on the action or not? Cause this ain't gonna be some sorry arse disorderly mess. We're doing it right, and I'm giving the orders.
We've been pulled to Carceria, you idiot! Anna snapped. Did you think you could just go skipping off down the road with a sack over your shoulders and be done with it?
The guard ran a finger along the edge of his axe, streaked with hastily wiped smears of blood.
Oi, I've killed half a dozen to get here already. Don't assume I'd think twice about sending your pretty head bouncing down those steps.
I gestured subtly to signal Anna to tuck her blades away. If we can calm things down, it'll help the town slide back into the Outlands. Once Kerst is wholly overrun with monsters, how long do you think you'll live to enjoy the spoils of your looting?
But,
he blinked. Treachery had been bred into the bones of these people for so long that they'd still live as thugs with the end of the world staring them in the face.
Nah, hells, you're right.
He shouted to the looters who'd gathered around him.
Right, you heard the man, let's get going. And if anyone speaks of this when we get the town slid back, you're dead. Now let's go, move!
He turned to me again.
And as for you, you have a better brain on your shoulders than most, it looks. Good man.
I tried the door. Locked. there was anyone inside, they were either civilians that needed to stay hidden, or else they were skilled enough fighters that needed to get out here and help clean the streets. Think you could get it open, Anna?
Tch, just you watch me.
The metal lockpick slid home. In record time, she gave a couple of scrapes, a twist, and a firm tug, and the lock clicked open. I didn't even have time to blink. Dim lanterns hung about the warehouse, shedding a diseased orange light about the room. I'd expected yelps of fear, maybe even a few sods stuffing their pockets and packs with whatever goods they could carry. What I didn't expect was the slightly stooped old man. A full gray beard clung to his face, and a lion's mane of gray hair flared outward. What would have been warm lighting instead cast a hellish glow about his face, giving the old man a sinister appearance. He wore a couple of shoulder guards as armor, and in his other hand he held a helmet. Long gray curls of smoke trailed from his pipe, and he fingered the tobacco pouch at his waist. I'd seen him before. That misleading bulk, a band of belly fat hiding years of well-trained strength and military skill. There was the hefty wheeze, the friendly twinkle in his eye that now seemed disturbingly sinister.
Eb?
I croaked, my voice all the coarser with shock. A halo of smoke wreathed his smile.
Well met by chaos, traveler. What brings you to these parts?
What are you doing here? I thought you'd retired from the Harmonium. He bowed as low as his paunch would allow.
As you can see, I've joined a different crew. You come to a warehouse full of plotters and schemers, lad. With the old order falling apart here, we think it's best to make sure its pieces are swept away and the people introduced to a new freedom. We're a dangerous bunch, you see.
I blinked. You're anarchists.
Correct, my friend.
He tapped his head in a small salute.
Eb Creakneys, formerly Harmonium Third Measure, and currently leader pro tem for this cell of the Revolutionary League. With the order of the town toppled, we're in a unique position to ensure that our views are heard. And I'm in charge of this little band of adventurers. Only for command purposes, of course. When the people see their leaders have failed them, chances are good they'll crush the power structures that repress them and make them something new, something beautiful. We're just gonna help them.
I ignored the diatribe. Just as well that you've gathered together. There's a lot of chaos going around in this town, and I'm seeking allies and stamping it out.
You seek allies against the chaos?
Eb shook his head sadly.
Yet we seek to increase the chaos, to overthrow the old order, to ensure that old schemes do not rise again. It's our job, after all.
It might be what you do, but you don't support destruction for its own sake. Anarchists destroy so that others may rebuild. There'll be nothing left of Cursed if this keeps up. His self-assured exterior slipped for a moment.
What do you mean?
What I mean is that while you've been plotting the overthrow of the city government, evil has come to Cursed and is currently destroying what's left of the city. Just look outside. I raised my hand, firing a bolt of lightning through the ceiling. Tiles and splintered wood rained down, revealing a gaping hole the size of a melon. The anarchists unsheathed their weapons, but held their attack. The tortured red sky wept through, casting the group in a hellish glow. The treachery of this town has turned on itself. We've been dragged into Carceri. Eb and his crew blinked, looking up at the swirling mass of gray and red, mouths agape.
I had thought... No, not another sandstorm. But we must do something. All our hard work will be for naught if we're all dead. Here, take this.
He handed over another scroll and turned to his brethren.
We must go, or all our work will be for naught. Come on!
He raced for the door, his companions in tow. Chapter 106 Initially, I thought it was thunder that tore at the wall between inner and outer Cursed, as if the chaos weren't enough without a Carceri storm ravaging the city. When we arrived at the epicenter, however, the crushed masonry and trampled bodies weren't the result of a tempest. It was a battle between two fiends. A Groshanok, who I had recently released from the grain silo, and Tekalok, whom we'd seen so secretively huddled in the guts of Cursed.
Bar that, chief, Mort cried out through the din. Just let them kill each other.
We gave him a wide berth. Mort, I need you to tell me about those blob creatures we saw beneath the city.
Blob? Oh, the lemurs? Yeah, nothing special, Chief. Just Beitezu foot soldiers. Don't think we'll have to worry about them unless they swarm us.
Mort is correct,
Grace added, checking over Dakon's wounds.
They are among the lowest of the Beitezu Order. Mindless, obedient, and the smallest scrap of their flesh can regrow the whole. I had once observed a Kurungan general gather 100,000 lemurs, ordering them to swarm across a battlefield.
She shook her head.
They flowed like water, clawing blindly at the Tanari horde. Waves of amorphous flesh broke against the enemy as the ocean eats away at the shore. 9 out of 10 in the Beitezu army died, but the ceaselessness of their attacks won the battle. Afterwards, in a single day, the Sea of Lemurs regenerated, and the army was reborn for the next wave.
Dakon nodded, derision sharp in his voice.
I have heard such stories among battle brothers as well. These tactics underlie the savagery of the Blood War. Neither the lemur horde nor the Tanari foes know what they do.
I shook my head. We need to slide Cursed back, now.
Speak for yourself,
Anna panted.
Some of us need a breather between shivin' fiends left and right.
We can't rest, Anna. My voice was hard, and she flinched as if cut by the edge in my tone. Trias hasn't just condemned a city of traitors, he's brought it directly into the Blood War. Cursed has become the launching point for a mass Beitezu attack against the Tanari. If Mort could have soiled himself, he would have just then.
Don't suppose there's a chance we can just run like hell?
Yeah, right this way. I pointed my blood-soaked dagger to the sound of battle and took off.
You know, I hate it when you agree with me sometimes,
he called out, floating as fast as he could to keep up. We had to redouble our efforts in securing Cursed, and by a stroke of luck, Anesius was dragged past me by 2 guards, the madness of desperation in his eyes.
Please, stranger, you must help me. Convince the judge that my alleged crimes are no crimes at all.
I ran up the stairs toward the makeshift gallows, to the sour-faced little man who raised an eyebrow at my approach. He spoke in the tone of an overfed, arrogant nobleman.
Mind you, sirrah, that you're interrupting an official process, and watch your words carefully. I am a powerful magistrate here, and would hate for you to share this man's rather sorry fate.
You can't execute this man. That sort of thing's why Curse slid into Carceri to begin with. And it's what we need to stop in order to get the gay town back on the Outlands.
Wrong? You quickly forget that I am a magistrate, sirrah. I myself decide what is right and wrong in this town.
You know this isn't right. Yes, he conspired to frame another, but you know that you're only going to execute him as a scapegoat. If you carry through with this, it'll only add to the chaos that threw this town into Carceri in the first place. I stabbed a finger against his sweaty chest. We have to put an end to this madness so we can get Cursed back where it belongs, before we're all killed. The judge furrowed his thick brows, forming a bushy white V over his eyes. He looked to me, then to the Gith, then to me again.
Both clever and wise are your swaying words, sir, and I thank you for your timely aid. It is well appreciated, and by this town as well as the accused. There shall be no more hasty executions. Guards, release this man!
The people's eyes were glazed with bloodlust, their voices ragged from screaming hatred with the mouth of a mob. The plump little official clawed at my kilt, mewling.
Please, save me! They're trying to kill me just for doing my job! I didn't mean any harm! Can't they see they're the ones bringing this town to ruin? Please, you have to do something!
The grizzled man leading the mob gave me a look of contempt.
What do you want, Burke? Can't you see we're busy cleaning out the trash that got us into Carceri? We get rid of this sod, we're golden. We're back in the Outlands, no problem.
What's happening is that your mob mentality is nailing this town even more firmly to Carceri. Forgive him and work together to repel the evil that's overtaking the town, and chances are far better that you'll be golden.
But Crap. All right, you got it.
He raised his voice so the crowd could hear him.
Let him go! We've got a whole city to take care of!
A slim man stood on a parapet, clad in flowing robes. His face was dark with anger, and he shouted at his subordinates as they moved with brisk efficiency.
"Hurry it up, scumbags! We only have so much time to make a sacrifice!"
"What are you doing?" He looked back at us with irritation sketched across his features.
"I'm capitalizing on the chaos, Burke. Now's the best time to take slaves, while everyone's worried about putting the town back in order. If you'll excuse me, I've got business to attend to."
He turned back to his men. "Too many people are adding to the chaos and evil done to each other. If you would have your men aid in the defense of the town, you might shift the balance again." He called out to his men.
"Stop what you're doing!"
He looked to me thoughtfully.
"So, you're saying we won't need a sacrifice to the Garaleths?"
"Of course not. This entire town will be a sacrifice unless you work with the other citizens." He cursed.
"Just my luck. Had quite a haul, too. Okay, boys, set them free. We've got a town to save."
The fighting was dying down, the chaos being contained. Men were being hauled down the streets, broken and bleeding, but thankfully alive. Men who just a day ago would have glared with suspicion gave thankful nods to one another. Hands that once held knives ready for a neighbor's back were clasped to haul the wounded from the wreckage of buildings. In the distance, I could see the heads of Agril Shinnok and Tekalok on pikes, grimacing at each other in hatred, even in death. A dirty man, hunched and crabbed with age and darkness, shuffled over to me. His lank, greasy hair flew from his shoulders as he looked around. It was the same hermit we'd met underneath Kirst. When he spied us, he blurted out,
"Kais the caretaker told me you'd be along. You've done a fine job of weakening him. The town's chaos is subsiding, and his plan ain't working so well. Head up and finish the job."
"How do you know this?" The earth trembled then, like the cold shudder before a sneeze. Something new was in the bones of this city. It was beginning to recover the sepsis that had infected it. Kirst was just on the edge of shifting, with one last barb holding it back.
"I can feel him up there, waxing and waning like a burning moon. I can hear him wondering when you will come. He aches for confrontation."
I looked upward to the balcony on which he stood, ribbons of divine fury spreading like morning mist. "Then he'll have it." And that's going to do it for this week's episode of Codex Radio. I apologize again for the mixed audio quality in this week's episode. I think I started to get it pretty well dialed in there toward the end, but definitely a bit poppier than usual, so sorry for that. Before I let you go, I just wanted to let you know that we'd love to hear your feedback about the show. You can tweet at me on Twitter, I'm at @endless_odyssey, or you can tweet at the show's account, codex_radio. We'd also gladly receive your emails sent to codexpodcast@myriadtrues.com. One such person who sent us some feedback is at Kuroki Shinra on Twitter. Shinra's a longtime Myriad Trues viewer/listener. What's up, Shinra? Shinra writes, "Hey, I'm going to start playing a 5th edition D&D campaign, and there was a race I knew I had to play when I saw it on the list of options. I'm going to play a Githzerai, because people need to know more of the unbroken chain of Xerthamon. Do you play D&D, and what races, if so?" I have to confess, one of the biggest black stains on my nerd cred is probably that I've never actually played a sit-down, tabletop Dungeons & Dragons game. All of my exposure to D&D has been through computer RPGs like Baldur's Gate and Neverwinter Nights and Torment and that kind of stuff. So I'm familiar with the systems, and I understand it at a basic level, I suppose. I guess I would say I'm a little curious about it, but it's not something I'm super interested in. I'm just, like, not very good at improv in general, so I don't think I'd be very good at it. And one thing that kind of puts me off it, I guess, is I kind of don't like game scenarios in which my personal ability to enjoy it and have fun is kind of determined by the quality of people you're playing with. It's kind of one of the reasons why I don't like multiplayer team games that much, like MOBAs or whatever. I mostly stick to single-player or multiplayer games like StarCraft and fighting games, because that way you're never let down by a terrible teammate, for instance. But I would say I'm definitely open to it. If I knew people who I thought would be really good to play with, I would totally be up for it. Like I said, I'm just not sure I would be very good at it, and I would feel bad if I ruined other people's play experiences. But in any case, to answer your question, I do not play D&D, but I'm glad to hear that you're going to roll a Githzerai, because yes, you need to spread the good word of Xerthamon to anyone who will listen. So good luck in your campaign, Shinra. I think that's all I've got for you this week, folks, so I will see you next week on another episode of Codex Radio.